the program, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Tuesday morning. It's budget day today, and so much of the talk on our program today has been surrounding that. We started our chat off this morning with Vashi Kapelos right at the start of the show. We had open lines for an hour to hear from you, and I appreciated Ian Lee just joined us from Carleton University. His impassioned talk about the need to turn around, basically do a U-turn on productivity. Productivity has been on the decline for the last 10 years, so how do we get away from these poor policy choices that have happened over the last number of years and get productivity back up? Now, another angle on this, I mean, you and I talk about what we would like to see in the budget, what would be good for Canada. Don't kid yourself. There is political strategy behind the things that are named in the budget. The Liberal government has strategy behind this. They're always thinking about what is going to help them, whether it's the next time they're at the polls or just generally what is going to garner more support for them. Obviously going to be striving for the next time Liberal majority government. At the same time, the Conservatives have their strategy and how they're approaching the budget. And so this is a great time to bring our next guest in. Fred DeLory has been on this program before a number of years ago, and we're glad to have him back. He's a chair and chief strategy officer for North Star Public Affairs. Former national campaign manager for the Conservative Party of Canada, has done work for Conservative parties federally as well. I'm glad to have Fred DeLory joining us by phone this morning. Fred, thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for having me on, Evan. Happy to be here.
So when I say there's always strategy behind the decisions that are made, what are some of the things you expect, just generally speaking, from a strategy standpoint from the Liberal government with today's budget?
Well, it's funny you say that. It's, Mark Carney is a central banker by trade. That's where he comes from. And I often wonder if the Liberal government is thinking through political strategy. I mean, right now they do not have the numbers. It's not a majority government, but they are governing like it is a majority. They're not reaching out to the opposition parties. They're not cutting deals. They only need three MPs from the opposition to vote with them. There's seven in the NDP caucus that you'd think would be ripe for the picking, but it doesn't seem that they've applied any real strategy to get them. Now, of course, we haven't seen the budget. Maybe there'll be stuff in there that will appeal to some of the other political parties.
So let's talk a little bit about the fact that this budget, when the vote happens, likely to be mid-month, there is the possibility that it could fail. And I was just before the break reminiscing about 1979 with Joe Clark and what happened there. Do you think, though, Fred, honestly, there's a chance that will happen?
Absolutely, there's a chance. Again, this budget is a real mixed bag from what we're hearing. Again, we don't know exactly what's in it, but from what we're hearing, there's going to be austerity, there's going to be cuts. So right away, and particularly cuts to the public service, that should really rile up the NDP and mean there's, you know, they cannot, in their, you know, if they hold true to their values, cannot support this budget. On the other side, it's supposed to be an incredibly high deficit, record-breaking deficit, way higher than the leader of the Conservative Party, Pierre Poilievre, said was acceptable. If it's there too, he can't support it. So that puts this into a real bind. The Bloc Québécois have already said they're not supporting it, and so is the Green Party, who only have one seat, mind you. But it puts it into a really tight, tight jam here. If you look at the vote right now as it stands from what we're hearing, 168 Liberals would vote for it, 167 members of the opposition would vote against, and now there's seven NDP not included in that who may abstain. But if two of those NDP MPs vote against it, and if the five other abstain or whatever, then the government is defeated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to watch how this is going to play out. Fred DeLory is my guest, a strong political strategic mind. And so from that level, is there a party right now that would benefit from an election being called? So let's say the budget doesn't pass. Who stands to gain the most given where the chips are laying right now, Fred?
It's interesting. All four parties, I'd say you can make the case, could benefit from an election, and at the same time it goes the other way. Right now the Liberals have a minority government. The way things are, you know, the parties and the polls are tied, but if you look at leader to leader, Mark Carney is way ahead of Poilievre in terms of likability, and that gives him an advantage. And if he can go to the polls and say, hey, these guys took us down. We have a plan. We're working out the deal with the U.S. They may be able to achieve something there. Now, that, you know, that's a tough thing to sell, given there is no deal with the U.S. 6-7 months after the last election. On the conservative side, you know, if you're able to bring these guys down and tell that story about how Carney was supposed to be elbows up, he is not succeeded. We have no deal with the U.S. We don't even seem to be negotiating right now. We need new leadership. We need a change. So there's something there to be told. For the Bloc Québécois, you know, they have 22 seats. They dropped a few in the last election. There's a provincial election next year, and the Parti Québécois, their sister party, is way ahead in the polls there right now and likely to win. So anything that they can do to fan the flames of separatism there helps them in their objectives. And then the NDP, they have 7 seats. 7 that I would say, given, you know, last election was a bit of an anomaly. They went down. Their leader was quite weak. They went down to below the 12-seat threshold for official party status. If they just run a localized campaign and go after 5 more seats, they could get official party status this fall and be back with staff and resources. So all parties have a story to tell and a thought to give about how an election could actually benefit them. And of course, when some parties go up, others go down. So there's risks for all parties as well.
Fred DeLory is my guest, Chair, Chief Strategy Officer for North Star Public Affairs, has done lots of work on federal and provincial campaigns for the Conservative Party of Canada, worked on Doug Ford's campaign. When I think about, I've had Pierre Poilievre on our program a number of times, and one time he was in studio with me and talked about how this Liberal government is stealing their ideas and kind of jokingly said, you know what, as long as they're stealing our ideas, I guess those are good ideas. Can you talk about the strategy and how it maybe has had to morph for the Conservatives? Because it seemed like it was low-hanging fruit, if you will, with Trudeau there. But obviously things have changed with Carney. He's moved that party, or at least the impression is he's moved to the center. Can you talk about the strategy there?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting situation where Poilievre was really matched up well with Trudeau, who had, you know, 10 years in government, had collected a lot of enemies, and there was a story to tell. And it's very different with Carney, where he's not a left-wing liberal. He is much more of a centrist. So that changes the game when he, as Poilievre correctly said, he is stealing conservative ideas and implementing them. So it does put a bit of, pressure on the conservatives to figure out how to deal with that. At the end of the day, though, I think there is a story to be told for the conservatives where they, you know, I would take a step back a bit and just give the liberal government enough rope to hang themselves and point out how, you know, there is no deal yet with the U.S. You're supposed to get this stuff done. You're supposed to get major projects built. Where is that? When is that going to happen? When are shovels actually going to be in the ground? And focus more on a bit more of a laid back approach than the aggressive stance he's taken before. And you can get aggressive come campaign time, but just kind of lay the groundwork. Let's see where they are. Like, if we get through this budget, we get into the winter, where are things being built in this country that was promised? And then if that's not happening, there may be an opportunity to really strike and take the government down in the spring and tell that story.
You know, the notion of, is Poilievre capable of changing gears that drastically will be posed to the Conservative Party. They've got a leadership review in January. I've been saying boldly that I can't see anything changing. I expect Poilievre will stay in that chair. Is that the way you see it, Fred?
Absolutely. I don't think there'll be any doubt that he wins a massive support number at the party convention in Calgary. It's going to be a love-in almost for him. I think the membership of the party quite likes him and likes his style. He is aggressive, and it works at times. And there's, you know, I think it's, he's just got to find that level of when to turn it on and off. And there's different times when it doesn't need to be on at the same thing. But at the same time, that's who he is. He is authentic like that. What we see with Poilievre is who he is. I've known him for 2 decades. You're not getting a character here. He's not playing someone else. So, you know, to that point, I think, you know, he has to be true to himself as best he can and show Canadians that.
Right. And you touched on the NDP briefly there, but they were decimated in the last election. They are literally, things are still smoldering. They're picking up pieces. They need to get a leader in place. How are they going to emerge and get, as you mentioned, 12 seats? They need to get that to get party status, funding, resources, everything that comes with that. What type of strategy should we expect to see from them?
Well, that's what's interesting about where we are right now today with this budget vote. They need to differentiate themselves from the Liberal Party. Why vote NDP when you can just vote Liberal anyway, right? Like, that's, they've aligned themselves and tied them to that other political party so much that it just basically became a wasted vote. So they need to differentiate, and that's where the budget is going to be a challenge for them. If there's all of these things in there that go against NDP values, like cuts to the public service, then they will need to vote against it and show that they are not the Liberal Party of Canada. Now, the problem is that may put us right into an election. So they've got to do that calculation. But, at the end of the day, I think an election for the NDP, as I said earlier, is not a bad thing for them. They could try to get official party status. I know they don't have a leader right now, but, you know, I've been around a long time, and I could tell you I think the NDP would be better with no leader than the leader they had in the last election.
So I'm curious. I'm going to step outside of budget just for a second. Knowing that you have done work on Doug Ford's campaign, I'm curious just to get your thoughts on this ad, which, of course, has captured our attention and has been in the topic of news stories now for the last week or two. Donald Trump not happy with the ad. Was it a misstep? Was it a good step? Was this marketing 101 by the Ontario government? Your thoughts, Fred.
Well, it's interesting because President Trump seemed to like the ad a few days before he didn't like it, right? He came out and said it was smart and he would have done the same thing. And then something shifted. Lots of rumors of what shifted. I don't know exactly what happened there. But what I find the most fascinating in the Canadian political context is Mark Carney is now basically, there's stories out that he asked Premier Ford to take the ad down. He asked, he saw the ad, didn't like it. There's this new narrative developing that I don't think is helpful to Carney and to his message of why he was elected. I think Canadians were rightly very, very worried about the relationship with the United States, and they felt last spring that Mark Carney was the right person to deal with it. And I'm not so sure we're seeing the fruits of that. I don't know if that's actually working out the way that Canadians expect it. And that causes tremendous risk to Carney. And that's why, he's got to be very careful in an election. He may want to try to get that majority, but he could also get out of government very quickly.
Fred DeLory, this has been such a good chat. I appreciate you joining us on the program. We'll hopefully talk soon.
All right. Always happy to chat.
Fred DeLory, Chief Strategy Officer, North Star Public Affairs. He's a former National Campaign Manager for the Conservative Party of Canada, worked with Stephen Harper, has done some work with Doug Ford. Political strategy is an interesting angle to look at the budget from, because as Fred, I think, eloquently laid out there, each party heading into not only the budget presentation, but then the digesting and decision around whether to vote in favor of the budget or not, really comes down to lots of political strategizing about the impact. What would an election mean? Would there be a different outcome? What are the possible ways in which this could go? So appreciate Fred joining us here on the show. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Thanks again to Fred DeLory for popping by. Always love hearing someone talk about political strategy from the standpoint of this budget and the vote. I did see a text on the line from Virginia saying, Evan, I still don't understand how an abstention, one of the MPs or some of the MPs deciding to abstain from voting, means the Liberal government can pass this because they don't have the majority of votes they need. But the problem is, this is the way it works, Virginia, is it's the percentage of votes based on those who vote. So if you were to get 10 people abstain, for example, and then those that voted in favor, the entire Liberal government of 168 seats, and then you've got the Conservatives and the Bloc that vote against it, their total is not enough to basically cancel out the Liberal votes. So when people abstain from voting, especially if they get 3, 4, 5 of them, it absolutely will swing the vote, knowing all the Liberals are going to vote to vote in favor of the budget, it will pass. So it's not even trying to curry favor to vote for the budget. It can be the strategy of getting people to abstain. This whole notion of basically not even showing up to vote, which I was gabbing about a bit this morning, my frustration with. I feel like they have a responsibility to make a decision one way or the other. Do you support it or don't you support it? Appreciate the thoughts on this. Lots of people weighing in and sharing their thoughts on abstaining from voting as well. I would say generally the majority of people agreeing with my point. Vote one way or the other. Be decisive about this and cast your ballot. You were elected to represent people in this country. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm looking forward to this conversation. We've got a guest talking about changes in social mobility. How easy is it for the next generation to improve their social status over the generation before? Will our kids automatically have a better life, make more money, have better social status than we did and our grandchildren and so on and so on? Or do we have challenges in our country right now and in the world that are actually driving it the other way? That we are living a better life than our children will and our grandchildren. A study was done. We're going to look at that study, and then we will go to the phone and text lines to hear from you here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.